William Breger, who is a professor in the Health Systems Program of the Department of International Health at Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health, and is Senior Malaria Advisor for JAPIGO, as we all know, affiliate of Johns Hopkins University. He worked for 26 years at the University of Ibadan in Nigeria and developed a focus on the social and behavioral aspects of tropical disease control, including malaria. He also focuses on training village health workers and peer health educators. And he's presenting this in collaboration with Koki Agarwal, who's the one who's listed on the program, who couldn't be here today. And so we'd like to welcome Dr. Breger.
Thank you all for coming today. We appreciate all the support we can get because this is a serious issue. Back in the early part of the 2000 decade, USAID pulled together some of its partners, Management Sciences for Health, JAPIGO, CDC, WHO, AFRO, to look at what they considered at the time neglected areas of malaria control. One was case management, the other was malaria and pregnancy. And as we see, here we are, 10, 12 more years later, and malaria and pregnancy is still somewhat neglected. And I think part of the answer has been leading up from the previous presentations, which has to do with the issues of health systems, that the health systems, the way they're set up to deliver malaria and pregnancy services, have some disconnects and have some weaknesses that we want to deal with. By the way, Koki is the director of the MCHIP program, and she does send her regrets. Elaine Roman is also the in charge of the malaria component of the MCHIP program. And Elaine and I and some other people form what we call the malaria core team at JAPIGO. The work I'm going to describe has been supported by the U.S. President's Malaria Initiative with funding to MCHIP to look at health systems issues in delivering malaria and pregnancy programs in Malawi, Zambia, and Senegal. And of course, working together with Rollback Malaria, as you can see, we have also been trying to understand the problem in other countries within Africa. JAPIGO, MCHIP, has been serving as a leader in the Rollback Malaria, Malaria and Pregnancy Working Group since it was founded over 10 years ago. So Koki and a colleague from the MCH Reproductive Health Unit at WHO serve as co-chairs of that Rollback Malaria Working Group. So we had to insert a slide to waste a little bit of time, but to let you know we're not disclosing anything, or we don't have anything to disclose. Okay, we want to provide you a quick glance at MIP program coverage. Again, we've implied this, but we want to take a sort of a cross-Africa look. What is working, what is not working, and then, as the title implies, we're concerned about partnership. What can we do to improve partnership between malaria programs, maternal and child health, reproductive health programs, and others to accelerate the efforts toward improving malaria and pregnancy program control. So what would happen is that, as I said, we looked at several countries, but we've also been looking across countries to see what is happening with some of the key indicators. Your malaria indicator surveys, demographic and health surveys, do look at two key things in malaria and pregnancy, this intermittent preventive treatment coverage. Ideally, a woman at present should get two doses during her pregnancy after quickening. Now, the new guidance from WHO says that she should get these monthly. That's partly because of the reduced efficacy of SP. It used to have a half-life, longer half-life, and so you could take it every 2 months, but now it's recommended monthly. So almost any antenatal visit after quickening, women should have this. But at least as far as the statistics were compiled up until the summer, everyone was looking at a minimum of two doses. Also looking at the issue of whether a pregnant woman has a bed net and is actually sleeping under a bed net. The key thing that we found in the demographic and health surveys of recent is that even if a household has a bed net, it doesn't guarantee the pregnant woman or even the child under five is going to use it. So these are some important things. And again, as was mentioned by Leonardo, the importance of the community. Why? What is happening? So we want to find out, again, delving into these problems, what can we do to improve the health system itself to increase malaria pregnancy programming? Now, these are some of the President's Malaria Initiative countries, and we looked at the IPT coverage from some of the more recent DHS. There may be one or two that have actually had a more recent, but this was at least up through 2011. And we can see that the target, the Rollback Malaria Partnership, set for every intervention, but this was 60% in 2005, that 60% of pregnant women in endemic countries will get two doses, and 80% by 2010. Well, as you can see, the three best performing countries, which we were asked to look at in terms of seeing their health systems and best practices, Malawi, Senegal, and Zambia, hadn't even reached the 80% target. So the best were still not the best. they may not have been, they were close to good, but, and then of course we see contrasts like Benin Republic with 1%. So some of these challenges, Nigeria, we can see that only 36%. And I think the what Professor Odengbede was telling us is that in contrast to the common knowledge, everyone says, oh, in Africa, which is like one big country to most people in the U.S., in Africa, most pregnant women attend antenatal care. Well, Nigeria is one quarter of Africa, and most women do not. Most women do not attend antenatal care. And even if you look closely at the DHS, what it calls antenatal care may not be by a trained ANC provider, nurse, midwife. It may be by a private clinic, but since the questionnaire asked, did you go to antenatal care? Oh yeah, I did. It may have been my sister-in-law next door. No, but you know, that type of thing. So the DHS, you have to look very closely. So we have these problems. So coverage of these basic indicators, even as we approach 2010, was nowhere near close. The same thing with the long-lasting net. And again, just a couple, a month ago, I was at a conference in Rwanda looking at malaria elimination, because they're getting close to thinking about elimination, close to thinking. And we heard a report that not only is the estimate of 5 years or 3 year lifespan optimistic, they actually found that nets that they had followed up lasted only 18 months. Normal usage, you know, 18 months. And this, again, partly they could be used better. People sometimes wash them too often, the insecticide's gone. People dry them in the sun, the insecticide bleaches out. You know, people let the goats and children play with them and everything else. And so not only are we not covering people now, but we have this gap coming up in the future. But again, here we find that countries, no one achieve 80% yet. Rwanda is getting close. We have to update that information. Rwanda is definitely getting close, and that's one of the key factors that has led to their thinking about this pre-elimination. Again, we are talking about the Malaria and Pregnancy Working Group. It's advising the RBM Secretariat. We do have a number of partners, university partners, NGO partners, donor partners that work together. Annual meetings bring together people from the health programs in the endemic countries to share their experiences. So what we're trying to do is look at this closely. And as a commitment to this partnership, again, the U.S. President's Malaria Initiative gave MCHIP funding to look in depth at three countries to see what lessons could be learned about how they had organized the systems issues around this. And we use a health systems framework. It's a little different than WHO's six pillars or building blocks or whatever they call it. WHO's pillars conspicuously left out the community as part of the important components of the health system. And so we, of course, have included that. But we were looking at eight components. And the question is, are these things at the lowest level just being talked about? Are they being tested? Have they been implemented? And have is the country ready now to control malaria in pregnancy? Are these things being sustained? So we looked at each of these. We did country visits where we did desk review, collected all the documents we could, published information, reports from agencies and ministries. We backed that up then with interviews with all the key stakeholders to find out what they knew about what was going on, best practices and bottlenecks for each of these eight areas, and then we're able to score each of the three countries on their readiness to maintain a good malaria in pregnancy control program. These are just the summary scores, and you can see that things, everybody had a policy almost. You know, that's the easy part. Now, whether it goes beyond sitting on somebody's bookshelf is another question. But some of the challenges is related to the stock out. Commodities were one of the major things. And it's a question oftentimes, I think that you were, Kate alluded to, others did, that when SP is no longer a frontline treatment drug, people forget about it. And they forget to order it. And the private sector uses it because it's cheaper and that's what their customers can afford. So there are serious commodity problems, as you can see. One of the fairly good areas was integration or partnership is what I'll be focusing on today to give you some examples of that. Because the partnership, you need partnership with the national and regional medical or pharmaceutical stores. You need partnership with the antenatal clinic where people come for these services. You need partnership with the monitoring and evaluation program in your ministry. You need partnership with a number of these groups to ensure that the services get delivered. And so partnership integration sort of underlies all of these other challenges. So we looked at these three country programs to see what we could find out in terms of the best practices and bottlenecks. So again, integration, as we were looking, how well was malaria integrated into the ANC platform? Or did the malaria unit say, well, we have the money and the commodities from Global Fund. Sorry, ANC, you have to find your way. You know, this is the, or are they saying, yes, let's work together, have an integrated monitoring and evaluation system, work together to ensure commodities, work together to ensure common policies and guidelines, not different versions of this, and different directions to health workers, common training of health workers. So this is what we were looking for, this coordination. And sometimes, of course, like I said, these vertical funding streams from donors sometimes bypass maternal health and reproductive health in favor of the big diseases. So in Malawi, one of the things we found is that 10 years ago, there was great level of success in integrating. They had an active malaria pregnancy working group. They had a strong collegial relationships between the two units. The MIP working group was chaired by someone from reproductive health with secretarial support from the National Malaria Control Program. So they got along very well, met regularly. But if so you could pick up the phone, they could talk to each other, they were working together well. But it didn't last. And guess what happens? There's something in the civil service called personalities. I guess no one's ever heard of that. And this, as leadership changes, relationships change, and unfortunately, pregnant women are affected. So we found that today, these things have been deintegrated. I wouldn't say disintegrated. That sounds too strong. But now there's weakened communication between the two, and alone, the problem of internal structure, when you put like the malaria units in one division of the ministry and reproductive maternal health is in another division, it becomes harder to communicate horizontally. So again, these types of structural issues, commodity issues, et cetera, even though we were talking about the area of integration and partnership, the other seven areas impact on the ability to do partnership, and poor or good partnership strengthens the ability to deliver these in these other areas. What we found in Senegal is that there was a little less effective coordination. So the problems on an operational level of including these in routine services. malaria, HIV, maternal health all have their own strategic plans. There could be better links between these or among these. And again, the shift toward a disease focus, bringing funding, how do you get that funding to be shared? You know, did their mothers tell them to share? With reproductive health, with MCH. You know, because again, where do you deliver PMTCT? Where do you deliver IPT? Where do you provide routine bed net distribution? It should be on the antenatal care platform with extensions, as we've seen in Nigeria, into the community, assuming those community health workers are trained and supervised by the antenatal staff. So that becomes sort of an extension of the antenatal clinic. Okay, Zambia, again, when you come to the written policy guidelines, whatever, there is integration. We have both programs providing technical oversight. We have, again, everyone has accepted this idea of focused antenatal care, the four crucial visits for antenatal care. If health workers don't know what that is, it's going to be hard for them to integrate things into that package. But it seems to be well understood in Zambia, and that is being used by both malaria and reproductive health to deliver the basic services to pregnant women. We used the Malaria and Pregnancy Working Group this spring, held in Kigali, to invite as many African countries who could get their visas into Kigali. That's another thing, that it's hard for travel and communication and sharing among African countries. Whether it was in Istanbul, we had the same problem. Whether it was in Kigali, we had the same problem of people getting visas to each other's countries. But we got at least, I think it was 7 or 8 countries at the meeting, and they were shown this health systems format and asked to talk about what they were doing in each of these things. And so, again, what we found is that they were either thinking about it or had achieved some level of collaboration, partnership, and integration with malaria and reproductive health. Ideally, we had somebody from each unit come to the meeting. So these are some examples from the presentations they made to us. They do have joint work planning in Kenya. They are thinking about planning to have meetings in Ghana. We have training that's integrated in Guinea. It doesn't hurt that MCHIP is working on that in Guinea. And in Tanzania, again, there has been a long-standing integration of the two with the maternal child health and malaria programs. So the RBM working group priorities are now to disseminate the updated IPT guidelines. This is very important. Again, it stresses it should be easier in a way to say that every visit you get IPT. Okay, it should be easier to understand these newer, simpler guidelines because what's happened in the past, as you see with the coverage, hasn't worked. So this needs everyone's help to disseminate, both with the malaria programs and the antenatal and reproductive health programs. The working group will work with countries to identify their need for technical assistance and help them find that to improve their programming, including their integration. We want to make sure that the malaria pregnancy is strongly represented in rollback malaria activities at all levels, international, national, local. And, of course, strengthen the existing working group, increasing the core members, making sure that we do have more representation from agencies that are concerned both about maternal health and about malaria, and coordination with the Harvard group, the Maternal Health Task Force, and others, Gates, etc., to keep this issue high on the agenda, making sure that all partners are involved. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you very much. I'd like to thank Kate Mitchell, Dr. Ojenbede from Nigeria, Dr. Chavan from Mozambique, and Dr. Breiger from Johns Hopkins University. And I'd like to open it up to questions about this topic of interest. And I don't know, would the speakers like to come up to the front and to take questions? Questions, please?
Do you want me to wait, or...?
speakers can come up, please. So you could go ahead with your question.
Okay. A very, very impressive panel presentation. Thank you for folks paying attention on this. And I think the panel has done a really, really good job of outlining what the major challenges are and improving lettering pregnancy programs. And the most recent one, what countries need to do. But I'm just wondering, in collective experience, what are the most effective interventions as a community facility interface? I mean, that's really where the rubber hits the road. Getting women into prenatal care, once they're in, getting the SP and the IPNs, and then follow up at home to make sure they're used. So I don't know if I have a specific respondent in mind, but what really works? What should we be focusing on?
Okay, who would like to answer the question? Would you like to answer? The microphone.
Is this on? Can you hear me through this, or is that the? Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
I pushed something.
It was on before. I don't know what happened.
Hello?
Oh, I'll just speak loud.
Okay. I don't know if they're recording, but anyway, maybe. I think the experience we've had in Nigeria with the community-based program is essential. This community-directed intervention was built off of a successful program for the distribution of ivermectin for onchocerciasis control. The APOC, the African Program for Onchocerciasis Control, pioneered the community-directed treatment starting in 1995. And they have successfully maintained, on average, their target of 65% village coverage of ivermectin since 95. And they're involving 18 countries. So they, what they call, reach the people beyond the end of the road. And so what they did then, about 4 years ago, is test the ability of this platform of the community-directed intervention to add on bed nets, malaria treatment, vitamin A distribution, what have you, and they found that by giving the community responsibility as well as supervision, it's always connected to the health center, you could increase double, triple coverage of these interventions. And so based on that, that's how we got the idea to adapt it to the malaria pregnancy. So the community not only can get commodities there, they can also do the follow-up, because one of the things, of course, with bed nets is the catch-up with coverage, it's the keep-up with routine distribution, and it's the hang-up. And most times people forget the hang-up part, you know, oh, the nets are out there, yay, we've done our job. And so the community volunteers can be sure that their neighbors, again, are using the nets. So without a community component, it's going to be difficult to achieve coverage. And this is not just for malaria pregnancy, it's all aspects of the malaria program.
Okay. Let me see. We have three over here, one over here. So I think these were up first. And then you.
All right. Thank you very much. My name is Femi. I work for the National Malaria Control Program, Nigeria, case management branch. I have just a quick question, rather a comment. Just to stay based on the presentation on the community. Intervention for delivering IPT. I think, well, as a country in Nigeria, we are not moving in that direction, even though there have been publications on that in recent times. So this is what we are doing.
Can you just speak up a little bit, please, so we can all hear?
The essence is to increase access. We want to get a lot more women to attend antenatal care services, and that's the platform for delivering IPT. The other comment is actually about the issue of the recent WHO recommendation, which actually states that they should afford the pregnant women access to IPCG at every shelter and intervention. My worry is, what is the other benefit of the second or third or the fifth doses of IPCG?
question is, and probably a comment. Community-based interventions, very good, even in Nigeria, for the past over a decade. CDI has worked very well. We've been able to distribute ivermectin. How is this feasible with community-based IPTV? Aren't we loading the community volunteers? It's so much more with the concept of integration.
Mm-hmm.
With point, the volunteerism work, because that's one of the only matters we have had ICTN in the country at the moment. We are really, it's a tug of war between the different programs, because there are programs advocating for the fact that we can't incentivize. Because we are going to use the gains that are accrued to other programs. Whereas there are other actors are saying volunteerism do not work.
Yes.
So I would like them to
okay. answer. Yes. Yeah. Thank you for the question. Who would like to answer?
Okay.
Maybe just a brief answer because we have several questions.
Yeah, that is the two questions. One is the added benefit of increasing the doses of IPT. And I think Bill already mentioned that. The gap between the second dose and in the interval between the first and the second is good enough for the half-life of the drug. But subsequently what we find is towards the end of pregnancy, people come up with, because we don't give it the last 4 weeks, more people come up with infections, clinical infections, and maybe related to placenta parasitemia and also newborn childhood malaria. The other one about community issue is, I think the reason is most of African countries look at health system as disease care system rather than health care. So we look at it as though the people who actually provide health are the people working in the ministries, in the hospitals. Whereas we now know that truly most of the problems we have, even the challenges with clinical conditions, including hypertension, diabetes, and so on, are with the individuals. There are things that can be resolved only basically by the individual or by the household or the community members. Now, so I think that if community members are prepared, in any case, let's face it, they are more committed than governments. Yes, they have more time than government workers will have by 4, they don't close. If you see anyone who is sick by 12 midnight, you're going to help if you volunteer. And, you know, these things have been extended even beyond things that are primary, things that are secondary and tertiary. If you look at the UCF Solar Care Project, most of the successful things that are presented are things that have been linked to the community members. In Uganda, in Nigeria, by the Ministry of Health, most of the things, fistula patients weren't coming, for instance, to the hospital. Until the communities got involved, they know the people, they can convince them that there's a care available, they can help them to access the care, they can give them follow-up care, and so on. So the community, when they feel, the client feels safer, better, more protected, more confident about what their community members will offer them. So what we need to do is to ensure that those community members are offering what is contemporary. I think that is the beauty about linking the services in the community with clinical, with the facilities. I believe that.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the next question,
sorry,
please.
I just wanted to clarify, community-directed intervention is not not volunteer-directed intervention. It's the community that sits down and decides how they want to handle these commodities. And what we discovered during the tropical disease research effort in 5 countries was that communities would sit down and say, okay, to get this job done for us, you have a motorcycle, you take care of collecting and distribute the nets. You're good with children, you handle the malaria treatment. Okay, you're able to, work around and mobilize people, you get them out to get the vitamin A during immunization time. So they divided up tasks because the community wanted these services. So it wasn't relying on one. What I've discovered is health ministries and health departments tend to put a limit on the community and say, you can select one volunteer. So that's not community-directed intervention. That is agency-directed intervention, telling the community that you the only acceptable way to do it is our way.
Okay.
But if they let the community decide how they're going to distribute this, you know, and who's going to be responsible, as long as the whole community is making decisions, then it will work.
Okay, but that's very good. Thank you. I just want to make sure we get some most of our questions in before the end. We had some.
I'm Peter. I'm from Zambia. I work with the Women's United Fiji tomorrow. So I was advised that I should just share a few things and some of the things that you guys think. I think that the best thing is that I think the potentials were very clear and straightforward and were very focused. I think Katie said it all, that I think most of the things that we should be worried about is some of the cuts that we've seen in the funding for malaria program. I think we've seen it from the global funds, we've seen it from the PMI, we've seen it from the government. And I think as we go back to our country, I think we should ensure that I think we go back in for more funding in the malaria program. The other thing that I thought I should probably bring out is the fact that malaria and pregnancy, for malaria and the prevention, we shouldn't be very prescribing the interventions. I think a lot of people just go fighting, something just go virus. I think we should be very specific with the country and with the areas. And I think that's the mistake that a lot of people make. Especially in Zambia, we know now that ITL are very, not very useful because the number of people, the prevention is very low about the pregnancy. We may be giving them a lot of them and we are spending so much money, but we know the system is very low. So we should be very specific to what we are giving. If you do a study and that study shows that the system is very low, I think we should change the intervention. IRS is very key, I think, in our case. And I think we are using IRS as one of the keys. I wanted to ask a question to Katie, and I think the professors were around. The pathophysiology of obstruction leading to a result of malaria, I don't know what may be the pathophysiology that could cause obstruction as a result of malaria. I think that was the issue that Katie brought up. I wanted just to know that why death or obstruction come as a result of malaria.
Thank you. Since we're close to the end, I wonder if we could have a few more comments and then some of the answers maybe from the group. And we had the next person.
Yeah, sorry, I just want to make a comment that sometimes we look at community programs as sort of plan B. For giving IPTs and wellness, once you decide the regimen, it's not rocket science. It has to be plan A, which is supported by our formal healthcare program, as opposed to plan B. That's what we need to plan for, not as, afterthought that we have to go and leave the community. That should be our primary purpose. Mm-hmm. The second point I want to make very quickly was, 15 years ago we talked about mountains of condoms floating around the world. You know, let's not worry about mountains of magnets. We'll save more lives with magnets than by burning them or using them for fishing or for, you know, dressing our windows. I don't think that's a problem. I think we need to get them out there to save lives.
Thank you very much. We had another comment over here.
Yes. I wanted to ask recently the malaria community has said they've contributed to the reduction of child mortality by so much percentage, I think it was 20% or more. I want to know, though, if that hasn't been done in malaria and pregnancy, if the problem with not paying enough attention to the issues that we need better data on the initiatives. And then the second question, I was listening to a presentation where they were talking about reaching about scarcity for pediatric care, and the two greatest obstacles are financial and transport. So if we truly want women to come into services for ANC care and to do delivery so they have access to prevention of postpartum hemorrhaging, which is high when you have endemic malaria and anemia, I'd like to know whether any of the parents that are looking at issues of equity and transport, and then if then we can reach for better data as well.
Okay, that's good. We had another comment, question over here, please.
Yeah, just a comment and a follow-up to the question asked by Femi. Just to say that involving community is not just carrying posters or visiting materials to go and discuss. I think it's true from the beginning we have community dialogue.
and answer the questions and concerns of communities and let them know exactly what they are participating in. The project in Akwa Ibom State was a clear example because we had community dialogue and communication systems where we reach every member of the community and everybody answered questions and said, yes, we can do this, we can volunteer. And what we're doing about community people, we're not talking about people who didn't go to school. Teachers who retired, medical doctors who have worked and retired and go back to the community. Some of us are from community. When we retire, where will we go back? We go back to the community. And we want to contribute and build a life of members of the community. So they can take additional jobs, they can take additional responsibilities, and they can work.
Yeah. Thank you. Urgent questions? This one? Yeah. Or a comment?
I just did an evaluation of integrated community case management in Benin.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing of the community health workers being chosen by the community is a big part of the success of the project.
Okay. Actually, we're 1 minute over time, so.